Hello out there. Welcome again to another episode of the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated Podcast. I am Matt Minnick coming at you here with Michael Rogner on Super Bowl Sunday. Yes, February 2nd. Groundhog Day, too. It's Groundhog Day. So anyways, we got Super Bowl Sunday. Michael, I feel like folks overestimate the amount that you know about the NFL. You're sort of like Jon Snow out there in California, and that you know nothing. But the 49ers are in the Super Bowl. So do you have a prediction?
Well, I do live in 49er country. You know, there's flags all over my street. Everybody's super excited. I go to a Super Bowl party every year that's hosted by 49er fans. So I'm usually the guy like standing out in the backyard talking to folks about other stuff while the game goes on. But it's pretty obvious that I need to pick the 49ers, you know, just
yeah.
Because everyone, I'm going to a 49ers party and seeing that, who are they playing?
They are playing the Chiefs.
Chiefs, yes, of course. If you put up a picture of the 49ers and the Chiefs, I don't know that I could name more than maybe two guys.
Do you know who Patrick Mahomes is?
I know the name. I know he's in a I think it's a Geico commercial or something like that with Aaron Rodgers.
Maybe Allstate, maybe.
One of those. Yeah. So he's a very good actor.
He is also a very good football player. So you're going to go for the 49ers just so you don't get ostracized by all your friends. That makes sense. What are you going to do if you start hearing the Chiefs war chant being played in the background at some point? Are you going to accidentally break out into that or start looking for the FSU Hoops game?
Yeah, I might just get triggered a little bit and just automatically start doing it. I will check the little squares game to see if whoever has the ball scoring enables me to win a little bit of money.
That sounds like a good plan. I'm actually more pumped up about the buffalo chicken dip that I've got tonight going. I'm sure I'll have the Super Bowl on at some point, but I don't know. I may put in my copy of Bill Murray's Groundhog Day at some point if the game gets out of hand, because frankly, I think the Super Bowls are anticlimactic. I like NFL football. I really follow the season and the playoffs. I'm a Packers fan, but sometimes the Super Bowl just doesn't quite live up to the hype. All right. Well, speaking of living up to the hype, Florida State did what I thought they might do. I know, Robner, you had kind of stuck with your 1-1, I think you had originally predicted a loss to VT on the Virginia road trip, and you stuck with it, even though you also thought 1-1, so a bit of a hedge there. Florida State was able to go up and get kind of a get-right game against an extremely young Virginia Tech Hokie squad. They led throughout the game almost. It was a little back and forth at first, but Florida State took control with a run midway through the first half. Led by five at halftime, quickly extended that lead out into double digits and pretty much maintained control for the rest of the game. And this was the seventh consecutive win over Virginia Tech for Leonard Hamilton. So it seems to be that we certainly have the Hokies number. So we get the win, 74-63. That's good for net purposes. Good for my guess is we'll stay in the top 10. Let me ask you, what would be the we're going to play three great things and two that give you pause from the game as we break it down. So you're going to tell us three things that really stood out to you as a positive and two that give you pause that maybe, you know, still could be concerning moving forward. I'm going to remove one off the table. Let's just go ahead and say that the obvious Devin Vassell, you can't talk about. The dude was completely on fire. 7 for 7 from three. Did you know, Michael, that he tied an ACC record with the most made threes without a miss in a game? Three other guys have that record. Do you know who they are?
I have no idea who they are. I'm gonna guess that it's someone from Duke that would hold the record.
You know, but they tend to, I think, shoot like 10 or 12 in a game and maybe miss one. Actually. The three people he tied are Alaric Freeman from NC State, who went 7 for 7 a year or two ago. And then James Collins of one Florida State Seminoles and Sam Cassell of FSU both also had 7-for-7 games from three in ACC games. So Devin Vassell gets his name added to that list of Florida State greats there. So taking him off the table, three things that you liked from the Virginia Tech performance.
Yeah, that's unfortunate that was removed from the table, because that was a really just, you know, super impressive performance from Vassell. The game was kind of delayed in the beginning. You know, a lot of us missed the first 5 minutes and because they were showing some other game. And then as soon as the game came on, Vassell starts going bananas, which was pretty nice to see. There were some other, you know, good things about this game, besides from the obvious win. Trent, I thought, played really well, and that has not been the case recently. He's had a few games where he struggled a little bit, and then in this game he was definitely the good version of Trent. And I think a little bit of it was overlooked because of, you know, how Vassell was playing, but Trent was totally in control on both ends of the floor. I think he ended up having like 9 rebounds and 5 assists. You know, the only thing he didn't do was he had a couple open threes that he wasn't able to knock down. But if we get that version of Trent Forrest every night, then I think that you know, this team is got a chance to really do some damage. You know, we've got that big game coming up with Duke, and we get good Trent that night, then you know, I like our chance to be in a close game with them.
Yeah, Trent was a 115 offensive rating, which was his best since the Wake Forest game back on January 8th, where he also had you know, only one turnover in that Wake Forest game. So a trend there when he doesn't turn the ball over, good things usually happen. You know, and this might be a small segue here, and I want to stick with our three good things, but because you brought up Trent, I'm just curious. He was 1-for-1 from the free throw line, which is great. And, you know, it's always nice to make yours, but it seems to be a trend of he's not getting the line. Florida State's not getting the line as much as last year. Now, I will say that the game was called masterfully. Can we get those refs every game? I mean, just fouls were called when it impeded a guy going to the basket, and when it didn't, they were left alone. So kudos to the referees of this game. But is that a little concern that Trent isn't making it to the free throw line as much, or the team isn't?
Yeah, it's absolutely a concern. And as you mentioned, a shout out to the refs, two of the guys, that was the first time they've seen FSU play this year. And the other one has ref Florida State games quite a bit, but in my mind, the way that basketball should be refed.
Absolutely.
So yeah, shout out to them. But so Florida State did not get to the line very much, 11 times. Virginia Tech also did not get to the line. They only got to the line 6 times, which is the fewest against Florida State all season. I think that matches the Chattanooga game. But it's not just those refs. It's a trend that's a bit alarming. This is one of my, you know, two bad things for the game is that Florida State's just not getting to the line. And part of that is, you know, you lose Terrence Mann, you lose Fiondu. Those guys were really good at getting to the line. But other than that, it's just like Trent is still drawing fouls at a pretty solid rate, but it's not turning into free throws. MJ Walker's kind of the same way.
Yeah, is that weird, right? MJ Walker is drawing 4.1 fouls per 40, and yet he's only taken 45 free throws on the season. That is a bit weird.
Yeah, one of the hallmarks of a Leonard Hamilton team after basically starting the 2013 season when we made the switch in offensive philosophy is that Florida State gets to the line a ton. Every year but one, we've been in the top 100 in the game, usually, you know, somewhere around like 50th. I think one year we were 11th. And now this year we're 258th at getting to the line.
And dead last in ACC. Like if you look at only conference play, so within the now 11 or 10 conference games, we are dead last in the ACC at getting to the line.
Yeah. One way to think about free throws is that, you know, if you look at every possession for Florida State for the entire year, they're basically scoring a point, you know, 1 point per possession. When you go to the line, you know, if you're shooting two and you're a 78% free throw shooting team like Florida State, you know, you're obviously scoring more than 1 point per possession. So it's really critical to get to the line, because it's not only free points, but it's also you're scoring at a rate that is higher than other possessions. And so to see us dead last in the ACC is a big concern. And I don't really see much of that that's going to change. You know, Devin Vassell is very ball dominant. He's also a jump shooter. You know, he's not one of these guys who's going to the line a lot.
He's actually so smooth at getting to his spots in the 18 to 22 foot range. He almost doesn't draw fouls. You know, he's almost like the anti Dwayne Bacon or Terrence Mann in that regard.
Yeah, it's nice that he can just go over guys and get his shot off. But we got to figure out some way to get to the line. Our bigs, you know, down low are not these guys who are going to get the ball and turn into the defender and you know really go through contact to get to the line. Outside of Trent and MJ, we don't have a lot of guys who are capable of driving to the basket and drawing a lot of fouls. So
Raekwon Gray can, but he often is the "you're too big, so it wasn't a foul" kind of call for him.
Or he touches the guy and it's an offensive foul on Gray. So yeah, I don't know what to do about that, but it's a problem, and I would hate for it to cost us a game, you know, in March when it really matters.
I don't want to put stuff out there in the air like that, but that definitely is the kind of thing you could see rear its ugly head in an Elite Eight game or something, where the difference is one team shot 20 more free throws than the other. All right, so we've done – that was a bit of an aside. We've done one great thing, and we've done one that still gives us concern. So I like this kind of we'll do a read and react podcast here and switch it up to where let's do another one-and-one, if you will. And give us another great thing that you saw from the VT game, and then one from a pause, and we'll finish on a good note with a third great thing. So what's the next great thing you saw?
Yeah, I'll take the return of Patrick Williams. He is a five-star for a reason. He can affect the game in a lot of ways. He has not been scoring in an efficient manner at all. He hasn't made a three-pointer since ACC play sort of restarted at the end of December.
Holy cow, I didn't realize that.
Jeez. Yeah, he's like 0 for 11 or 12 or something.
I guess he
like
missed
that.
A couple games in there too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it also it doesn't matter. You know, it would be great if he was scoring at a high level or an efficient manner, but you know, that's not what Florida State needs out of him. He's kind of I would compare him to Phil Kofer from last couple years team, and that he is sort of the key to me to making that small lineup, you know, really function on a defensive level. He's one of these guys who's, you know, he's 6'8" and he's 220 or whatever, and he can get in a stance and defend a lot of different guys. He can guard big guys, he can guard small guys, and I think we saw a big difference in the second half when Coach Ham really kind of rode Patrick Williams and some of the other guys, and no offense to Wyatt Wilkes, but Wilkes was on the bench. And so it didn't give the opposing coach, you know, one player that they can just attack. You know, it kind of solidified our defense a little bit and made it harder for Virginia Tech to get to the spots and you know, run their actions like they really wanted to.
Yeah. I don't have a lot to add there. I think that was really well said. The difference that Patrick Williams made on defense was immediate and noticeable. I do think that, you know, we've talked about him, you know, possibly being a one and done. And I still think that there's a good chance that he is one and done. But in a world in which he maybe decides to pull a Dwayne Bacon and come back for a second year if he feels like he's got a little bit of unfinished business left or just wants to develop a few more things, I could see him becoming a very good offensive player next year. He's just not there yet, but his defense is, and we are a better team with him on the court, even if he is struggling to find his jumper. I thought his rebound and one that he had in the second half there to really extend – that gave us that, I think, 15-point lead and really kind of put puts the game at a different picture in terms of how the opponent has to now try to press to come back and start to adjust what they're doing. I thought that was a huge moment in the game and something that maybe against Virginia we just didn't get because you just don't have a guy like Pat Williams there underneath. All right, let's go. So what was your second kind of concern then coming out of the game? You've given us two great things. So we saw Trent being back to Trent, Pat being back on the court. Hopefully his toe is able to, you know, help him out on a quick turnaround against UNC. What is the next bad thing you saw?
Yeah, I just talked about the defense and especially the second half defense and all that. The concerning thing is the defense to me. So the specifically, we've seen in recent games dribble drives just tearing Florida State up, and as improved as we were with Patrick Williams back on the court, it's still a major concern. You know, I thought that Florida State did a really good job of just keeping the ball out of Wabi Sabide's hands, you know, to not allow him to sort of take over the game in the way that we saw Virginia sort of attack FSU. You know, they forced the ball more into Landers Nolley and Naheem Aline's hands, who are not quite the attackers that Bede is, but we're still getting beat off the dribble. We're still seeing lots of collapsing defense, kickouts for open threes. You know, we're sort of lucky that Virginia Tech missed a bunch, of open shots. And so, yeah, that's still a concern. It's like the free throw thing. I don't see, there's not one thing that suddenly everything is going to click. You know, this is going to be a game-to-game adjustment, and we just have to hope that Florida State continues to not only defend better on the perimeter, but also, you know, rotate better and know when to help and, you know, all those little things that make the difference in close games. And as we head towards, you know, you mentioned that we don't want to curse the team by talking about potential ways to lose in March, you know, but as we head towards the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament, you know, those little tiny, you know, game within a game, just a possession here, a possession there, you know, so often makes the difference. So we really need our defense to continue to get just, you know, a little bit better every game.
Yeah. I think it's worth noting that MJ Walker didn't play. He's one of our better – he's not quite the on-ball defender that maybe someone like Anthony Polite is, but he knows the system. He's a big defender. He's able to switch on most guards and wings. You know, it'd be great, Lord, if we could just get all of our guys Pat comes back and MJ sits, get all of our guys playing in one game. But, you know, your points about the defense are well taken. And have you ever – can you remember a team, a Florida State team at least, that was so good at turning teams? I mean, we're fifth in the country at turning teams over, and we're first in the country at blocks, lead the entire country at block percentage. But it feels like if we don't do one of those two things, we really don't play all that good a defense.
Yeah, it is a little boomer bust. You know, I think the coaches recognize that, which is one of the reasons that we're turning teams over at such a high rate, is that we're selling out to get turnovers. Our 2-point percentage defense has been good. That's always the one thing to watch with a Leonard Hamilton defense, but certainly not at the elevated levels of some of the really good defenses. So
yeah, it's at since you brought it up, it's at 74th right now, 2-point percentage defense, which out of 350, what is it, 8 teams, 353 teams, that's a good rank. But if you look at last year, you know, of course, with Cabangeli and Kamaji, it was 21st. The year before, it was 17th in the country. Year before that, it was 38th. You have to go back to the 2016 team, which was an NIT team, right, that had some fairly poor defenders in freshman year, Dwayne Bacon. Malik Beasley was not a great defender. And so that team was 175th. So clearly a step below this team. But that's an NIT team, right? So we got the worst 2-point percentage defense that we've had since our last NIT team. So yes, that's a concern. Anything, I mean, to your point though, is there's not really a way to fix that, right, at this point in the season?
No, I think we're committed to it. You know, it's just, it's, we're committed to the boom or bust. We're going to give up some layups in order to create more pressure on the perimeter to turn teams over and, you know, try to get more offense, you know, out of our defense. And I'm totally fine with that. You know, this is not the personnel to, you know, have someone you know, last year where we had a 7-4 guy in the middle, you know, right. we just don't have the personnel to defend that way. So, you know, I think the coaching staff has turned this team, you know, into a top 25 defense, with, while also playing really small, you know, which is not an easy thing to do. So yeah, I think we're going to live with it the rest of the way, and we just have to hope that we're turning teams over.
Yeah, next year's team with Scotty Barnes, and who knows, maybe Naheem McLeod can come back. I don't know if he's still in the fold for the program, but I've seen him around campus in the Tuck for sure. And even like a junior Anthony Polite, maybe a senior MJ Walker. I feel like next year's team maybe could get back to it a bit. But if folks are out there are curious. So that NIT team we talked about, yes, they were 175th in two-point percentage. Why were they an NIT team and not an NCAA tournament team, whereas this current year's team is 18-3 and ranked in the top 5 or 10 in the country overall? Aside from the ACC being a bit down this year, it's also noteworthy that that 2016 team did not turn teams over. They were only 118th in the country, and they – weren't near as good at blocking shots. They were 72nd as opposed to first. So they were not boom and bust. They were just more of a bust defense. Whereas to the coach's credit and to the players for buying in, this year's team has really rallied around like doing what they can well and accentuating those aspects and getting the most out of what they have. All right, let's go to the we'll finish on a good note here with our VT talk. Give me one more great thing that you saw from the Virginia Tech game. So we've talked about Trent, and we've talked about Pat, and of course we already took Vassell's record tying performance off the table. But was there something else?
Yeah, if you listen to the radio broadcast, if you got sick of the announcers and turned on the radio, then you heard the exact opposite of what I'm about to say, which is that the final 5 minutes of the game was managed just really, really well by Coach Hamilton. We were up 10 with 5 minutes to go and slowed the game down where Trent was basically, you know, taking 10 seconds to get it across the midcourt line. He had to kind of jump across to avoid a 10-second violation at one point. And the radio announcers were saying that this kind of slowing things down is the reason that Florida State struggles down the stretch of games, which is a weird thing to say because up until Notre Dame and Virginia, Florida State had outscored like 6 straight ACC opponents in the final 5 minutes.
The first Virginia game was basically won in the last 5 minutes. And then the Miami game, we had no business winning. Frankly, we just have a history of playing really well in the last 5 minutes of ball games. It's why our record in close games is so good.
Yeah, and even yesterday we outscored Virginia Tech. And so we have given Coach Hamilton a kind of a hard time for the way he manages players with 2 fouls. Like he's clearly going against his best interest in a couple of the ways that he manages games. But when you have a 10-point lead and you slow the game down, there were only 8 possessions total for each team in those final 5 minutes yesterday. There's no way that Virginia Tech can win unless they start fouling with 5 minutes to go. And so you're basically putting the opposing coach into a position where they need to change the way that they want to manage the game if they want to have any chance of winning. There's very few situations where you're going to outscore somebody by 10 and in just 8 possessions.
Yeah, you just have to catch complete fire.
Yeah, so Florida State scores in half court. Florida State scores a little less than a point per possession, so say like 0.9. And when we slow it down, if the offense is more sluggish, which I don't even know that it is, that might be that 0.9 might go to 0.7. So you're basically giving up a point about every 5 possessions. And that is good. That's good game management. You know, so when there's only going to be 8 possessions left and you're up 10, then you absolutely want to create a situation where there are just as few possessions as possible down the stretch, which Coach Hamilton did. There's a coach who's been making some noise out west. His name is Todd Golden. He's the coach of University of San Francisco. And he's doing some things that people think are pretty crazy. He intentionally fouled the other night at the end of the game when he had the lead, and it's because he's able to basically determine the expected value of a possession and figure out when it's better for his team to have an extra possession. So just sure, go ahead and foul at the end of the game and have your team finish on the offense as opposed to the other team. There are lots of, situations in a game where you can kind of just turn the math a little bit in your favor. And since we give Ham a hard time for not doing that in some other cases, you know, we really need to shout out in this particular game that he's doing the exact thing that you should be doing down the stretch. So if you listen to the radio broadcast and you're wondering why Florida State struggles down the stretch, you know, A, Florida State does not struggle down the stretch, and B, it was totally the right move.
Yeah. Well, and then you add in the fact that Florida State is such a strong free throw shooting team. And while you know, the concern we talked about earlier about getting to the free throw line is very real, if you're forcing a team to have to start to foul you and you're a 77% free throw shooting team, that's a good thing. So, and that kind of goes back to our Pat Williams conversation where, that and one to put us up 15 is big, because that at that point is where you're starting to see like, okay, the mass can start to become a factor. And even if VT cuts into the lead a little bit, which they did, got it to I think 7 at one point, we quickly pushed it back to 9 or 10. That then allows Coach Hamilton and Coach Jones to do exactly what you're talking about and start to turn the math in your favor and say, oh, there's four minutes and 40 seconds here to go. Let's start to, burn this clock. All right. We are going to, we're going to take a quick break, go grab something from the fridge and we'll come back on the flip side to talk about the North Carolina Tar Heels, which come to town tomorrow. We got a quick turnaround here for a game. So we'll talk about North Carolina when we come back. Okay. So Florida State 18-3, 8-2 in the ACC, sitting there, I believe, are we tied for second still, or because Duke won last night, right? Yeah, so Duke and Florida State are tied for second. They have not played each other yet. Both of them are a game and a half back of Louisville in the conference standings. And Florida State now welcomes a struggling North Carolina Tar Heels team to the Tucker Center. North Carolina coming in at 10-11 and 3-7 in the conference. They have Cole Anthony, their 5-star point guard, back. He played for the first time in, 11 games, I think, which is, man, what a dumb decision, I feel like, by everybody all around in his camp and Roy Williams and everyone else. But maybe we can get into that a little bit. Nonetheless, with Cole Anthony back, as could have been expected, he was rusty. It disrupted the flow of the team, and North Carolina came out and promptly lost to Boston College at home. So neither a team appears headed for the postseason. What do you expect here with the Tar Heels coming in? They still have talent on the roster.
Yeah, they were definitely a little rusty, or Cole Anthony was a little rusty. The team was not used to playing with them because he missed 11 games or whatever, but they're absolutely a better team with Cole Anthony than they are without him. We kind of made fun of North Carolina for, dropping a game at home to Wofford. But that was without Cole Anthony, as were their losses at home to Georgia Tech, Pitt, Clemson, that sort of stretch that they went through. It seemed like they were kind of turning it around. They they whooped Miami. They won at NC State.
Miami without Chris Likes and Cameron McGusty, but they did put it on them. Yeah.
And it's true that North Carolina is talented. They have without Anthony, they have five blue chip recruits, including a 5-star and Armando Bacot. So this is not an untalented team, and Cole Anthony was like the 4th-rated recruit in the nation or something like that. So they should be better than they are. They're not. This kind of reminds me of Roy's 2010 team that had like John Henson and Ed, what was his name? Ed Davis, Deion Thompson.
That's right.
Tyler Zeller. You know, they had a good team then too, and they won five
games. A bunch of NBA games.
Yeah. And they won 5 games in the ACC. So this is sort of that team all over again. It's unfortunate for Florida State that Cole Anthony, for whatever crazy reason, has decided to return. So North Carolina in general should be able to give us some problems in the interior. You know, Armando Bacot and Garrison Brooks are both, you know, big, strong guys who are we going to go big, you know, to match up with them and then not switch? Or, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to go small and then, you know, just kind of get rolled down and down low? It'll be interesting to see, you know, how Ham approaches this game from a coaching perspective.
Yeah, Garrison Brooks in particular is a guy who gives me, I think, concern. Although it's interesting, it seemed like he had just figured out how to start playing without Cole Anthony. You go back and okay, these were games they lost, but he had 35 points against Georgia Tech. He had 18 points and 10 boards against Pittsburgh, again in a loss. 16 points and 13 boards in the rematch against Pittsburgh 2 games later, another loss. 28 points and 13 rebounds against Virginia Tech. He had 25 points and 11 boards against NC State, and that was actually a win. And he comes back, and so Cole Anthony comes back, and he has 10 points on 5 of 15 shooting. Now, he did go 0 for 7 from the free throw line. I don't expect really any player to ever go 0 for 7, let alone a guy like Garrison Brooks. So that probably won't happen again. But it is interesting that Cole Anthony comes back, and it seems like Garrison Brooks really struggled. But they'll have now a game to have figured that out, or at least a day of practice to maybe figure some of that out. Cole Anthony, I'll be interested in, because he is the type of guy, right? I feel like he is the exact type of player that could give us a lot of trouble off the dribble, like we've seen in previous games. It'd be great if MJ Walker could be healthy. But how is he going to – what do you expect from a guy who hadn't played in 11 games, comes back and plays 26 minutes off the bench against Boston College in that loss, and now he's got to strap it on again 36 or 40 hours later at the Tucker Center and play against a deep and physical Florida State team? I mean, aside from the fact that if you were his advisor, he wouldn't even be playing basketball right now, that seems like it's a hard ask, no?
Yeah, he scored 14 of his points from the free throw stripe. You know, he went 14 for 14 against Boston College. Yeah,
probably double that for against us, right? Depending on which refs we get.
Right, and so it's. I think a lot of that is going to come down to how the refs are calling the game. You know, they have a couple of guys who can really bang in the post. They have Cole Anthony who can draw a lot of fouls. You know, so how is the game going to be whistled, and then B is how is Cole Anthony going to respond to, you know, actually getting a little bit of action on that injured knee and then having to turn around 2 days later and play against a very physical and big, you know, defense in Florida State. So yeah, it's not a great position, I think, for North Carolina to be coming into this game, which is fine with me, but it's going to come down, I think, to, you know, what you're saying is how well Cole Anthony responds. He is a incredibly talented player, so it's, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he comes in and has a good game. And you mentioned Garrison Brooks, and it reminds me a little bit of when Bryce Johnson came in. What was that, like 2016?
That's exactly the name I was thinking. Yeah. Yep.
39 points and 23 rebounds.
That 2016 defense that we just talked about really didn't do a great job of stopping teams on the interior.
Yeah, and we should be clear that Garrison Brooks is not Bryce Johnson. Bryce Johnson was an incredible player. But, you know, the Garrison Brooks version of that game could easily be, you know, like 21 points and 17 boards or, you know, something where he's just coming in and we have no answer. So, yeah, we'll see. I think a lot of it's going to come down to how well Cole Anthony plays and then, you know, that interior duo of Baycott and Brooks and whether or not Florida State actually has an answer. And didn't Brandon Robinson?
I was just about to ask, actually. So, you know, so North Carolina, one of the reasons why they are struggling this year, despite their talent, is they, like Virginia, they have just really struggled shooting the ball. 324th in the country from three. They're 29.5% on the season. In ACC play, that has pretty much maintained itself, right? This wasn't just early season struggles. They're 14th in the conference there at 29.6%. So it really hasn't changed in ACC play. They're also, you know, terrible from the free throw line. I talked about Garrison Brooks going over seven, but as a team, they're just 65%. Although they do get to the line a decent amount. So, but perhaps their best shooter, arguably their best shooter, Brandon Robinson, you know, no word yet on his injury, but it looked like an injury that, you know, an ankle injury that I'd be surprised if he can play 36 hours later. And so he was coming in there. I mean, he was 35% from three, and he's their only player who's made more than 25 threes on the season. He's also 54% from two and a tremendous free throw shooter at 82%. So, yeah, they're if he misses, I feel like that becomes even more incumbent upon Cole Anthony to really dominate the ball and get it and, you know, penetrate and get it to Garrison Brooks. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we deploy a little bit of that Dennis Smith Jr. defense that we brought out for NC State three or so years ago.
Yeah, Brandon Robinson, that would be a big loss. And I know the x-rays came back in his favor, but it's still, you know, a bad sprain and kind of a weird play where a player was jumping into him and hurt him and whatever. Brandon Robinson is, aside from being, you know, maybe their best shooter, he's also a senior and he really understands how to get the ball into the post. And that's an area where North Carolina could, you know, not be as efficient without him. You know, he gets the ball to Brooks and Baycott in good position to score. This is a kid who Florida State recruited heavily. It came down to North Carolina and Florida State, and he ultimately chose North Carolina. You know, but he looks like someone who would play for Florida State. You know, he's like super long and
right,
and 6'5", bouncy, and yeah, long arms and I'm surprised he didn't get hurt more because his legs are about as big around as my wrist, but
he's got the Akara White legs.
Yeah, exactly. But he's a good player, you know, and he would definitely be a big miss. He's you know, like he's sort of a low volume, high efficiency kind of guy, and he just does a lot of little things well. So yeah, that will definitely be a big loss for North Carolina if he can't go.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of a poor man's Devin Vassell. So I agree that would be a loss for them, but I will agree with you. And, you know, I forgive me if in this preview, we're not talking a whole lot about Florida State. I kind of feel like, look, at home, we are a very good team at home. You hear, I've had people over the years say, man, if we could ever just get, if Hamilton could get, he's got that defense. If we could just get shooters to go with that defense, think how good we'd be. Well, I don't have to imagine it. How good we'd be is how we play at home for the last 65 games, because we typically shoot pretty well at home. You see guys like Wyatt and Anthony Polite, you know, rain in threes at home. We typically are able to turn steals into transition buckets at home. And that's why we're 59-3 or whatever we are over the last 60 some games. So yes, that's how good we'd be if we could pair our defense with elite, you know, highly skilled five-star shooting capabilities. But I keep looking at these three numbers. This is fouls drawn per 40 minutes. Cole Anthony, 6.7. Armando Baycott, another five-star, 5.7. Garrison Brooks, 4.8. That's a bit scary. There's no one on FSU's team that is drawing 4.8 per 40 minutes. And they got three guys. That's 4.8, 5.7, and 6.7. I hate to say it, but it sounds like it's just going to come down to what you said a couple minutes ago. How is this game called?
Yeah, and it'll be really frustrating if the refs screw this one up, because North Carolina Florida State games are almost always super fun to watch. They're like the opposite of Virginia Florida State games,
right?
Where I don't enjoy watching them even when we win. You know, North Carolina FSU games are usually just really entertaining games. They're up and down. The teams both want to get up and down the court, but are doing it in very different ways. You know, so you've got this contrast of sort of high flying styles. You know, it's just a really interesting and one of those games that every year I circle, and this is the one I want to make sure that I am there and present and ready to watch this thing, because they're usually super fun games, and if the refs screw this one up, it'll be upsetting for a number of reasons. One, and that it will favor North Carolina if the refs have a tight whistle. And two, it's just let's see what college basketball could look like with a few rule tweaks.
Yeah.
And Florida State UNC is kind of that model.
Yeah. So I hope you're right. You definitely are right about the historical, watchability of these FSU-UNC games. You know, you think back to the Todd Galloway draining the three from the corner to send it into overtime. And there's been a couple of times where UNC's had, I think, a Harrison Barnes buzzer beater, a Ty Lawson buzzer beater, and all those games were just a lot of fun to watch. The ACC tournament game that I think you had in your top three games of the last decade was just a blast, super well-played basketball game. So hopefully the fans are given a treat, win or lose. And of course, you'd always want to see it come out on the right side. Do you have a prediction for the game? I will say that I happen to be right in the Virginia Tech prediction. I'm not, just saying I got lucky there. But do you have a UNC prediction?
Yeah, my Virginia Tech prediction was poor. I will admit that. I'll try to step it up a notch here, and I think that we're gonna handle North Carolina. I don't know how easily we're gonna handle them, but I think Florida State will win something like 80-73. I think it'll be a really fun game to watch, a high possession game, and. But one in which Florida State will come out on top. I think MJ should be ready to go. He was mentioned that, he probably could have played against Virginia Tech. Ham is extremely conservative on putting players out there with an injury, which is a great thing for your coach to be,
especially when you're 18-3. Why risk it? You know,
right? And the life after college basketball is what these kids are here training for. So you don't want them out there risking injury, someone on the other team who's coming in with a big scar on his knee. So I'll take Florida State, and I what did I say about like 7 or something? But yeah, it should be a fun game.
I agree with you about the 80. I actually think it might even be a bit higher scoring than that. I'll say that I think Cole Anthony kind of comes in and rides some early adrenaline. I don't know. It's 7 p.m. ESPN primetime game on the road against probably a top 10 team, maybe somewhere in that 7-8-9 range. And so I think he rides some early adrenaline and momentum and really comes out looking like the Cole Anthony that college basketball was treated to earlier in the year. I think it's a fun back and forth first half that might even see UNC take some 5 or 7 point leads. And then I think that in the second half, reality hits and Cole Anthony wears down. And if Brandon Robinson indeed cannot play, that depth loss is felt. And as Florida State and Leonard Hamilton continues to send in waves of bodies, I think you see Garrison and Cole become ineffective and inefficient in the second half. And maybe Florida State pulls away for a, let's call it 84-74 victory over the Tar Heels. So starting that we play 4 of the next 5 games at home. So starting it off on a good note there.
Yeah, and it should be a really well-watched game. You know, we're on ESPN. There's really nothing else from a college basketball perspective that's going on tomorrow night. So
yeah, I think Texas goes to Kansas for a probable beatdown after our game at 9. You're right. I don't know that there's a lot going on besides our game. Should be front and center.
Yeah, so if it's a fun game and we win, then I think it'll turn a lot of eyeballs to some people who maybe haven't seen Florida State play this year.
If you're in the Tallahassee area, get your Super Bowl hangover taken care of and head on out to the Tuck for what always is an exciting atmosphere of up and down basketball. Michael, enjoy your 49ers area barbecue or whatnot, whatever the festivities are going on in the neighborhood, and we'll touch base after hopefully defeating Roy Williams and the Tar Heels.
All right, it was good talking to you as always.
Yep.
Go Niners. I'm contractually obliged to say, I think.
All right. Bye.